This program originally aired in 1992.
Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Dick Sudhalter, a man of many talents. He's a writer, musician, radio host, and, as they say, much, much more. At least I know what hat you're wearing today. At least I think I do.
Well, you never do know, but you know, there's one thing terribly wrong with introductions of that sort, and that's,
you see, I knew you'd get off on the.
Well, the problem is very simple.
Telling me how to do it.
The problem is very simple. It's like getting a wonderful review, you know, where somebody says, "This is the finest singer or the finest cornet player ever to come down the pike." Then afterwards, ever after, you have to live up to that.
You know, I never have figured out, what do you consider like your main talent? Are you a writer that plays cornet and flugelhorn, or are you a flugelhorn player who... No, you're not a flugelhorn player who writes, because you've written books.
Well, what I really am is an equivocator. that is to say, at some point, you know, when you're a little kid and you see the fire engine go by and you want to be a fireman, and then you see this and you see that, and you never can make up your mind. Well, nobody ever told me that I had to make up my mind to be one thing. And I've been very lucky, actually. I mean, in all seriousness, over the past, 20 years since I left United Press, I've used a combination of different things to make what generally at the end of the year comes out to be a decent living.
See, now that's one thing right there that you just went by real fast. You were with United Press for about 10 years, weren't
right.
you, in England?
Well, many, many countries, Central Europe, in Germany, Austria, Eastern Europe, Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, also all over the shop. And it was very exciting, very event-filled time in my life.
So even with all your work at UPI, you were still playing the cornet, weren't you?
Of course. That never stopped.
Well, thank goodness for that, because this is the time we ought to hear from you on the cornet. What do you think?
Well, let's do something then.
Okay.
How about that wonderful old meteorological Irving Berlin song, "Isn't It a Lovely Day to Be Caught in the Rain"?
I'm for that.
Okay, let's do it.
Boy, this is different stuff for me, playing tunes like that. You know, it's and playing in a different style. Now, how did you settle in on that particular style of music? I mean, I can't put a name on to it, because it's just good jazz, but it's a certain style as opposed to bebop.
Well, I think really you're just a product of what you first hear. You know, Marty Gross, the guitarist, has a theory that in later life you always come back to the first thing that impressed you, and that's where you remain, you know. And I think he's got a point there. I grew up in a household dominated by a father who was a saxophone player and who loved Bix and all the people who were around Bix. That is, you know, Frankie Trumbar on the one hand and Jimmy McPartland and people who were in that orbit. And I just grew up liking that kind of lyric playing, and through it, loving songs. And to this day, I just love the idea of a melody, you know, and what you can do with a melody.
That's something I guess I miss about contemporary music, is lack of melody. I think that just has gone out the window. Just to hear a nice tune with pretty harmonies, that's all I want, really.
Well, at some point, it seems that jazz switched tracks. For a long time, most of the chief improvisers were people who improvised on melodies. And then sometime along, you know, in the early 40s or whenever the thing changed, it became more a matter of playing essays on chord changes. And really, you know, it's in the end, it's a question of what you prefer. And to me, and to all the people I admire, for example, in today's music scene, somebody like Ruby Braff, he plays a melody. He gets that melody out there, and he coined the phrase, you know, adoration of the melody. And it's really quite true, because that's what it's about. Look, here's an example. A song which is very, very little known. It was recorded maybe twice when it came out in the early 30s.
I hope it's one I know.
I think you know. We've talked about this before, and I remember you said something. But I think it's a lovely tune, and really what I like to do above all is just play the melody as well as I can and generally make the thing sing, you know, just get it out there. It's called Chasing Shadows.
Really fun playing duo like this. I mean, I never get to play this certain way. You have to play a certain way when there's no bass and drums. Actually, you have to do a lot of things that I'm sort of learning to do all over again.
Well, I like it because it keeps me on my toes, you know, because, you know, there are no throwaways. Everything you play has to have some weight to it because the other person's bouncing off it. It's really very stimulating.
Yeah, and actually, you're out there. I mean, you're out there. You can't sort of hide behind a flurry of paradiddles or something.
And a lot of people use that flurry of paradiddles. Right, it's true. No, and I love that song anyway. It's just a wonderful, haunting kind of tune.
It's funny, that really goes back to my childhood in England. I guess it used to get played a lot years ago, and I just learned it. I don't think I ever saw the music, just learned it sort of by hearing it, as one learns so many tunes. Well, when in your life as growing up in Boston, it was Boston, wasn't
it?
When did you first hear Beck's Beida Beck?
When I was 12 years old, and I'd been struggling rather vainly with the piano for about 5 years.
You mean vainly as vain?
As in vain.
Oh, okay.
Right. You know, in love in vain. Well, this is at the keyboard in vain.
Okay.
I found in my father's record cabinet a copy of the Whiteman record of San, you know, with Bix. It's probably the only one of his records that my brother and I hadn't succeeded in breaking.
What's it called?
It was San.
San.
Yeah. Da ba 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 ba, you know.
Yeah.
That's very futuristic.
That's
I like
not
that.
It. It's a little. No, never mind. I give up.
Anyway, I played it, and it was really a kind of epiphany. You know, I said, "What's this sound? I love it." You know, and my father came home from work. I said, "Who is Bix?" And of course, you know, this opened Pandora's box. Before you knew it, I had a cornet, and we were off and running. And like so many kids who discover jazz, the first impulse was, "I've got to make this sound myself." And I suppose, you know, this has been true since the beginning of the music. You heard something. I mean, Jimmy McPartland, back in 1922 or whenever it was, heard that Friar Society record at the little soda shop and said, we've got to do this. It's not enough just to play it.
And isn't it amazing how people learned in those days, well, and I guess still do to a certain extent, just hearing the records and keep copying what they hear. And I mean, they didn't have lessons like how to develop an embouchure, a lip or anything, did they? They just sort of learned by doing. didn't they?
Somehow it strikes the spark. It's like lighting a match in the dark for them. And even these days with, you know, so much music assaulting your ears in elevators and restaurants on the radio and TV and all the rubbish that it's possible to hear, yet you still have younger generations of guys coming along, and women now too a lot.
Thank God.
Well, I mean, it's long overdue, you know, and it should have happened years ago. Of course, we all know why it didn't. But now they'll somehow contrive to hear a record, and somehow it's pop, you know, got to do that.
Somewhere along the line, you became a Hoagy Carmichael buff, didn't you? Didn't you start to like some of his tunes?
Well, that was a natural progression because Hoagy was a friend of Bix's. They were all part of that kind of Midwestern jazz scene in the 20s. And also, if you listen to some of the early Carmichael songs, particularly Stardust, which if played in a kind of medium tempo, sounds like an attempt to play a Bix solo.
And didn't they do it sort of like this?
Sure.
Tempo.
Ba ba da ba dum. You know, it has that Bix flavor to it. Mm-hmm. Or Skylark, which Hoagy originally wrote to sound like. You know, and so it was a natural progression.
Oh my goodness.
And well, he wrote a lot of wonderful things.
He did.
And one of my favorites certainly has always been a tune which he wrote mainly because somebody sent him unsolicited a piece of verse which took his fancy and he turned it into a song. It's a thing called I Get Along Without You Very Well.
Oh, I love that. I think I could maybe play that.
Could you?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was absolutely delectable. And, you know, it pointed out something or reminded me of something, too. You played that in A.
Yeah, why not?
And you were probably the first person through that piece that you did with Whitney Balliet to alert me at a much earlier time in my life to the real significance of different keys for coloration and for weight and for you know, treatments of different types of material. I, like many horn players, had never given a moment's thought to that beforehand. But I was thinking while you were playing that, what a wonderful key A is, because it's all kind of leafy and it has wonderful, when the lyrics talk about rain and all the things that are going on while this woman is in her reverie, the key is ideal because the tonality is right. If you'd played it in a darker key, it wouldn't have worked that way.
God, what can we say or do after that?
Play an absolutely illogical song.
Okay, well, all right, pick one then.
How about, let's see, a tune written by, of all people, Zez Confrey.
Oh, my God, you're not going to do...
No. In fact, I will not do that, and I won't ask you to play Kitten on the Keys or anything
no,
the rest of it.
Heaven forbid, I never could play that thing.
But this is a song that, for reasons that I really... I don't think there's any logic or rhyme or reason to it. I've just always liked the song. It's called Stumbling.
Oh, goodness. How are we going to do it?
Well, we'll probably do it fast and get through it real fast and laugh a lot when it's finished.
As long as we both end together.
Okay.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station or stream the program online at pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina Public Radio.